Welcome back to War Seats in the House. Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta coming to you from very late on Thursday evening. Anthony, as usual, it's his world. We're all living in it. 9:45 at night.
We had to wait till your Novocaine wore off.
I was willing to do this hours ago, and you made me drive behind a plow going 20 for 25 miles to come here.
I didn't have to drive behind a plow, but I had to drive behind cars driving 25 miles an hour all the way from Lakeville. I had an awesome dinner tonight with the Feller's Ranch steak that was terrific, and then it was spoiled by having to drive home. But it made me so appreciative of the fact that we spent a whole winter without snow.
Yeah.
Because people in Minnesota apparently forgot how to drive in snow. If, however fast you decide or however slow you decide you have to drive is fine, but then drive in the right lane. If you've deemed that 22 is the proper speed for you on the freeway to feel safe, that's fine. Then drive in the right lane. And if the guy in front of you is going the same speed as you, just stay behind him.
Yeah.
Switching lanes to drive the same speed as the guy next to you drives me bonkers. And that's what I dealt with the whole way home from Lakeville.
It is funny how it's been obviously a beautiful winter. I'm sure a lot of people actually missed this type of weather, but it is funny how Minnesota always just reminds you you are in Minnesota like around this time of year. You know, it's like you think it's over and spring and all that stuff. And here it is, 22 degrees and a really wet snow.
When 2 weeks ago, golf courses were opening, people thought it was spring. Then you get the slap in the face that, you haven't had snow. Didn't have any snow at Christmas. Didn't have any snow at New Year's. But mid-March, here's a little wet snow for you just to wreck your spring.
Exactly. Margo was in a mood when we arrived.
Good mood.
Well, kind of good.
Like immediately attacked me for drinking water in a water bottle. Do you know how much plastic you're ingesting right in that water bottle?
Yeah. You know, listen, we've learned since January that there was a stretch where like vegetables were the devil. You couldn't eat those because we were only eating whatever was like animal based stuff. So no broccoli, no apples. By God, don't eat an apple after like 6 o'clock at night. Now tonight it is and it isn't what we do to the environment. It's the flecks of plastic that are in your system. So you got a glass of water. I asked if I could have a bottle of water just to see the reaction. That didn't go over too well.
No, it did not. And then she was making lamb lung pudding for your dog. So it's already been a fun time.
But we have a tremendous fruit salad.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to have a little fruit when we're done.
I'll have enough fruit to last me like a month now.
Actually, I've seen you eat fruit. It'll be like 2 days.
I do like to eat fruit.
Yeah. All right. So I'm agitated because I had to drive through this plow.
Are you disgruntled?
I'm disgruntled because I'm just going to tell you right now that I'm going to flip a lid if you try to justify last night's loss by any stretch of the imagination, other than they freaking sucked. And once again, they have gone into a building in a must-win situation against a good team and floundered. And they've done this all year long. They don't beat good teams, Anthony.
Well,
the odd time, Gustafson stole one in Carolina. Wow, they had a big effort in Vegas.
Yeah,
they don't beat good teams.
They have, but last night
Times this year, maybe.
Last night was a disappointing loss. But there's two things I would say about it. Number one is that
please don't say puck break.
No,
puck
bounces. It was unbelievable the way the pucks bounced against. Because I thought the way the game started last night, I actually thought their energy was good. I thought the intensity was good. The battles were good. And
I don't
then,
disagree that.
And then the first goal goes in. It's headed 2 feet wide of the net. It hits a stick that changes the direction and then hits Fleury's elbow and deflects in. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even a shot on goal. And now you're down 1-0.
Why did that happen, though?
Well, it was a turnover.
It was,
Was that the Hartman turnover? Was that the first
after
goal?
After the Hartman awful icing. The icing that was 30 feet.
So, look, I'm not trying to say that the Kings were the better team last night. There's no doubt. But the way the puck bounced last night, then there's a puck that goes in that deflects off of Mermis's arm through the five hole. There's another one that goes in off Foligno's stick. There's one where a guy's trying to pass it to somebody else and it deflects off a stick right to a wide open player in front. it was one of those nights for the Wild. I don't know if even if the bounces had been even, if they'd have won the game last night. The Kings were better. The Kings deserved to win the game. But what I don't agree with is that the Wild didn't show up for this game, because I think they did. The game since the All-Star break where they didn't show up was in Nashville. That was a night they didn't show up. The effort wasn't anywhere close, and they got run out of the building and blown out. There isn't another game since the All-Star break where I would say the Wild didn't show up for that game. They've lost some games, no doubt. They lost to Carolina when a puck went in off a guy's face. They lost in overtime in Denver where their effort level was unbelievable in a high-pressure, must-win game, and they fired a bullet, just lost. They played well in St. Louis and lost. But the game in Nashville was the one where they didn't show up for a big game. I think they showed up last night in L.A. They didn't get bounces.
And they just got their ass kicked.
They got their ass kicked
again.
Right. But the other part of it is they're without Spurgeon, Brodin, and Eriksson Ek.
Mm-hmm.
You show me another. Take the Kings lineup. Take Anze Kopitar, Drew Doughty, and Mikey Anderson away. And say, all right, and not, I'm not even talking about the salary cap penalty. I'm just saying take your best two defensemen and your best defensive centerman away. Now go try to beat a team that's playing for their lives just like you are. This was going to be a tough game for the Wild to win no matter what going into that game. We knew it when the trip started. We said, look, they're going to have trouble. Anaheim, they should win. That LA game is going to be a grinder because we knew it was going to be without Spurgeon and Ek. We didn't know it was going to be without Brodin. As soon as Brodin went down, I would have bet my house on the LA Kings last night. There is almost no way the Wild win that game in Los Angeles last night. Doesn't mean the season's over. Doesn't mean it was a lackluster effort. Doesn't mean that somebody should be admonished for what happened. They were going to lose that game. I didn't see it being 6-0, but they were going to lose that game last night.
My problem with last night's game is watching the veterans. They all were terrible. Goudreau and Johansson are normal, absolute no-shows. Ryan Hartman, first shift of the game, causes an icing for no reason with a really lazy play along the boards, and then on the ensuing faceoff turns the puck over. He was so bad in the first period and on the first shift of the second period, he was benched the entire second period. Marcus Foligno, not very good last night. Matt Zuccarello, just absolutely atrocious. That is my issue. It's not because of Adam Beckman and understaffed because Dakota Mermis isn't. The veterans need to be better. These are the games that these guys need to show up in and elevate their game and play better than they've played all year. And what do we see again is Johansson and Goudreau doing nothing. Hartman and Foligno really struggling. Their penalty kill again, absolutely embarrassingly bad. And that is a major problem of why they are in this position.
Well, the penalty kill is an issue, and that has to be addressed. And
I don't know how you address it because it's the same team coming back.
It is, except that I will say that a big part of their penalty kill is Eriksson Ek, Spurgeon, Brodin.
Mm-hmm.
Those are your best.
He played 60 something games.
Right,
up
I'm saying last
this.
Night right. was a like if you're just looking at last yeah. night's game.
But if you also, I would say Eriksson Ek and Brodin have been on the ice for more goals than anybody on the team. If you look it up on PK,
because they play more minutes than everybody
I'm just saying,
on the kill.
Like you can't. Like, this is the same penalty killers coming back next
year. Well, it is. The penalty kill's been a little bit better since the coaching changes. It hasn't been good enough at any point all season long. And it's strange because it's roughly the same personnel that 2 years ago was one of the better penalty kills in the league. And if you remember, that was the year they decided we're going to be uber aggressive. They started it in exhibition with, I think, like 6 shorthanded goals in the exhibition season. It carried over into the regular season. They scored a bunch of shorthanded goals. It's basically the same guys. And the last 2 years, it hasn't been good enough. And it has to be better next year, without a doubt. And
I don't know if you listened to Boucher and Enzo last night, but they were talking about the stick positioning of guys like Middleton, Foligno, and Hartman all game being in wrong sides. And this is stuff John Hines is pointed out
too. Has, and so did Dean Evason.
Yeah, like it was are these guys just awful penalty killers? Like, what is going on here? Because I know that Marc-Andre Fleury has the worst penalty kill save percentage in the NHL. It's been that way since day one this year. Gus isn't that much better. Although, you know, it's weird. Even like Hellebuck, who might win the Vezina this year, has got a really mediocre penalty kill save percentage. But their guys in front of these goalies are not doing their jobs. They're not getting clears. They're not getting in passing lanes. When they're in shooting lanes, they're deflecting the puck in like Foligno last night.
Clears have been an issue all year. They haven't mm-hmm. been very efficient with that. But there's been some turnover lately, too. I mean, when you think about it, that the guys
Duhamel, Dewar, and Duhamel
were a big part of it. X injured. Foligno has been injured. You've been dealing with your key penalty kill guys out. So you haven't had the consistency all year of the same guys in there. And yes, goaltending is a big part of it. They just haven't gotten saves on the, especially early in the year. I mean, that was one of the, I remember about the time Evason got fired, we looked up the penalty kill in terms of high danger chances against per 2 minutes, shots per 2 minutes. And they were top third of the league in those categories, but their save percentage was bottom four in the league. And that's why their penalty kill was terrible. And I don't know. I think the kill has to be addressed during the offseason. There's no doubt. They needed a kill last night, but they didn't lose the game last night because of their penalty kill.
Well, three of their goals, pretty much. I mean, yeah. One came 2 seconds right. after the
two Foligno. Technically power, but I think they lost the game last night when a couple of bad breaks went against them. And it was a team that already was playing ridiculously shorthanded, knew that. And you could see it. When the fourth goal went in early in the second period, the game was over. There was no way they were going to score four times yeah. with the lineup they had last night.
And Hartman didn't see another shift. I think he saw maybe one more shift in the second. And that was like 15, 16 minutes later. Beaten to the net on Matt Roy after being major prior to that one penalty kill goal in the first period, and then obviously the icing, then turnover that led to the first goal. Nashville, by the way, 16 straight games now with a point shutout in Florida tonight. Vegas up 1-0 right now, it's crazy the schedule. You know, at the beginning of the season, I remember how happy the Wild were with this break. They're like, this is going to give us a chance to get healthy. And I remember being all nervous about it. I'm like, if they are a bubble team, and here we are in that situation here where they play one game in the next week yeah. and Vegas plays
and
four.
I know I saw your post about that. And the truth is, like, it's the perception, because the reality is everybody's going to play 82. So it doesn't matter when you play them. You're right about the perception is going to feel
yeah,
like if Vegas wins
back.
A couple games. But here's all I would say. Vegas has two games in hand, and you're 3 points behind them. So let's even say Vegas wins those two games, and you're 7 points back. I think the key for Minnesota is
two games.
They've got
Vegas.
Two games against them. And if you win those two games, you have to be 3 points better than them over the remaining 10 on your schedule. And that's what this season's going to come down to. They're probably in a spot where they have to get 4 points in those games against Vegas, and Vegas can't get any or maybe one. But if you do that, they weren't going to go undefeated the rest of the way. So there, I saw a lot of people who were like, oh, this season's done now, season's over, because they lost to LA. I thought they were going to lose to LA. You thought they were going to lose to LA. When the trip started, we thought they'd lose in LA. They weren't going to go 15-0 the rest of the season.
Right. And which is why I've been saying the playoffs have been over for a month.
But
I mean, they are.
But
this
even
is,
if they
all
were
this
gonna,
like stuff about being, oh, they're three back, two back, whatever.
It doesn't.
They were never. They are not making the playoffs. Well, the pace
not,
of play. They only had the ability, basically, down the stretch, to lose 2 or 3 points.
They had not necessarily. We actually looked at it in our last show. If they kept playing at the pace they were playing since the All-Star break, which was a 720 points percentage, that if they stayed at that pace, what would the other teams have to do to catch the Wild? So this was, we showed this going into St. Louis. So this would have been heading into the Blues game last Saturday we played in St. Louis. At that time, the Wild had a 720 points percentage after the break. If they continued at that pace, we looked at what the other teams would have had to do to finish ahead of them. And LA and Vegas would have both had to have been like 8-7-1 or 8-6, depending on how many games they had left. It was 8-7-1 or 9-8-1. So it wasn't like they had to go 4-12. I mean, they still had to be a 500 club. Now, if those teams go 12-3, the Wild can't catch them. It's that simple. But if those teams go 8-8, now the Wild, if they go 12-4, Well,
Vegas is on pace for 96 points if they win tonight. Wild can max out at 98.
Right. But I'm saying that that's Vegas's season pace. It's not their post All-Star break pace.
I know.
And I'm saying what the teams are playing right now is not, if Minnesota wins now, because they're going to have to win the two games against Vegas. But if they do, let's just assume they do for argument's sake. They win those two games against Vegas. Well, now all that means, without Vegas, the two games in hand, Minnesota's one ahead of them. So now Vegas, the teams basically have to play with the same record in the remaining games. Vegas has the advantage of games in hand. So what are the Wild go 8-2, Vegas can go 6-6, and they end up even. If the Wild go 8-2 and Vegas goes 7-5, they lose to them. I mean, that's just the way
within two and then lose 7-0 there. That's the way the season has gone.
Look, I'm not saying that I think Minnesota's going to make the playoffs, because I don't. But heading into the St. Louis trip, Karts and I were talking, and he said, what do you think the percentage is? I said, I'd say 33-35 that the Wild make the playoffs, somewhere in that neighborhood. But I thought they'd win in St. Louis. I thought they'd win in Anaheim, lose in
LA. So you're
an
analytics guy. All these models at all these times have 16, had 8-16. Yeah. Like you throw that out the window?
I don't, because of the fact that I was looking at it with how the Wild were playing since the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. And since the All-Star break, because those models take into account the whole season. And the whole season is different than how teams are playing right now. Now, I will say, after the Wild lost Jonas Brodin in Anaheim, to me, that now the number's 15. I just don't, unless Jonas Brodin makes some kind of remarkable recovery and is back on the ice, I don't think you can sustain playing 720 hockey without Jonas Brodin in your lineup.
Yep, great.
But if he's back and they can play 720, I think 720 is good enough. I think 720, which would have been 11-4 at the time going into St. Louis, would have been good enough to get the Wild into the playoffs. Now, I just don't see them being able to maintain that.
1-1-1 in their last three. Obviously, we'll find out Friday if Joel Eriksson Ek can practice. I know they're very hopeful of that. And we'll see what's going on with Jonas Brodin. It did not sound good. As Bill Guerin said to me at the GM's meetings, it's really come at a bad time.
A bad time. And just think about what this...
I mean, if it's a sprained MCL, his season's likely over.
Yeah, and just think about what this team has had to fight through this whole season. And we've talked a lot about the 1-7-1 stretch, December, January. So if you look at all the teams since the coaching change, so go back to November 28th, since that time, the Wild are, I think they're 15th or 16th in the league, and they might be higher than that, 12th. 12th in the league in points percentage. And that includes the 1-7-1. You throw out the 1-7-1 when they were playing without such a it was basically an American Hockey League team with a couple stars thrown in there. If you eliminate that stretch, the Wild are 7-0-2 since the break, since the coaching change. The only team in the league that's better over that time period is Edmonton. So when I'm not talking about the penalty of the salary recapture. I'm saying with the roster they have, Edmonton's the only team that's been better since the coaching change when they've had their guys on the ice. That stretch is what's killed them, because it's forced them to have to play at a level so far beyond everybody else, because you lost 8 times in 9 games when you didn't have these guys. And you can say what you want. Oh, this means they didn't have depth. Well, they didn't have depth. They're $14 million behind everybody to start with. That's why they don't have depth.
Right.
And so you look at like last night's game as an example, and you take Spurgeon and Brodin and Eriksson Ek plus that. This is what $50 million against $85 million looks like. Yep. That's why teams that don't spend to the cap don't compete.
Don't disagree there. Here's a word from some of our sponsors.
Hey, it's Russo here from my friends at Aquarius Home Services. You know, some say as you age, surprises diminish. But daily, I'm astounded by my love for Kinetico water treatment systems. It's a constant delight. With Kinetico in both my home and cabin, I can confidently say it's the best, just like the Aquarius team. The minimal salt usage, the pristine cleanliness of my laundry, dishes, and showers, it's unbeatable. Plus, it runs at zero electricity. My recommendation? Get a free water analysis from Aquarius Home Services and prepare to be amazed by Kinetico Water. Aquarius believes in earning the right to be recommended. They're just a click away at KineticoMN.com. And don't forget to mention, Russo sent you.
Hey everyone, Attorney Jerry Bosch here with Bosch Law Firm and WorkCompExperts.com. For almost 30 years, we've represented Minnesotans just like you all over the great state of Minnesota to guarantee they've been treated fairly and with respect when they've suffered a work-related injury. A work injury can change your life in an instant. You need someone on your side who can help you focus on getting back on your feet and getting paid while you do. You may be entitled to medical benefits, wage loss benefits, job placement, retraining, and payment for permanent disability. To make sure you are being paid all the work comp benefits you're entitled to, please call the attorneys at Bosch Law Firm. The call is always free, and there's never a fee unless we recover benefits on your behalf. Call 651-333-8300, Bosch Law Firm, or visit us at WorkCompExperts.com.
Don't wait. Save smarter with a 5.10% annual percentage yield 13-month certificate from Royal Credit Union. Royal's 5.10% 13-month certificate has no minimum opening balance and a locked-in rate for a guaranteed return on your investment. Open a 5.10% 13-month certificate at any Royal office or online at rcu.org/certificate510. Early withdrawal penalties could reduce earnings and principal. APY accurate as of 3/1/24. Insured by NCUA.
Back here, worst seats in the house, Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta. I don't even think I have mentioned that March 27th at 7 p.m. is our next live show. That's at Elsie's. March 27th at Elsie's is our next live show. If they lose to St. Louis, and they are come next week, next time they play way back of Vegas, how soon do you think, because it's going to happen, that Bill Guerin brings up Volstead just to give him some looks? Because, you know, also, I guess if Brodin's out, you could put him on LTIR and gain more cap space. But what I was going to tell you was, without that injury, you know, the waivers are soon going to end for guys like Lucchini and Lettieri. So you're going to have to afford Volstead, send somebody down, because they pretty much used their entire LTIR pool, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, there was going to come a point pretty soon that they were going to have to make that decision. I just wonder if we're going to see him at some point here in the next couple weeks. What do you think?
I think we'll see him if it becomes clear that the Wild can't make the playoffs. I think as long as you have a fighting chance at a playoff spot, you owe it to the other guys on the team to stick with Fleury mm-hmm. and Gus. And I don't know what it would take for that to happen. I mean, they're about to start a stretch of 6 in a row at home. When you look at the schedule, Vegas has got a really tough schedule. They got, yeah, I think, 7 of the next 8 on the road. So I think you almost have to make it through that spot. So to me, unless there's something...
Get to April and give them four or five games.
Unless there's something egregious that happens, like Vegas wins the next 3 and the Wild lose the next 3 and it's done. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, you really have to get through the next week and a half and say, all right, let's see where we are at that point. And if you're out of it, there's no reason not to call him up and give him a couple of games.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be the rest of the season or anything like that. And obviously, again, we don't know what's happening with Marc-Andre Fleury. You can't just, you know, give him the Alex Goligoski and say you're never playing again. And frankly, that might be the case with Alex.
Wait, do you think, 100% speculation, you think Marc-Andre Fleury plays for the Minnesota Wild next year?
I do.
I do too.
Yeah. I think it's Gus and Fleury. And if it's not Gus and Fleury, it's because Gus is traded and it's Fleury and Volstead. But I generally wonder, I mean, he's 21 years old. I don't look at Volstead. I mean, he's playing behind a very flawed team down there, so it's hard to really recognize. And obviously I don't watch him every night. And Joe Smith is going to meet with him this upcoming week. But it just, you know, I just don't see a guy that looks like he's ready. I also don't see a guy that's in perfect shape either. I think that he's got to really invest himself this summer to really, you know, becoming a little bit more professional and things like that. And I think he's made huge strides, but I don't know if you want to throw him in the fire next year. I mean, especially it's another year where they're 14.7 down. You know, their blue line should be good if Spurgeon's healthy, but it's not something that I genuinely think that he's ready for him, which is why I think Fleury's back. And I only think Fleury's going to continue playing if he has special circumstances, and this would be one of them. I think that he'd want to stay here if he could. So it'll be really, really interesting. What do you think of Kuznetsov so far?
I think he's been good. He hasn't been anything earth-shattering, but he's been good. His speed's been evident.
Yeah.
He's been good on face-offs. I will say, let's temper it a little bit. Two out of the three games when he jumped out in the face-off dot were against the Ducks, who are one of the worst face-off teams that you'll see. He lost 4 out of 6 against the Blues. But I think he's been good and certainly looks like a guy who belongs in the NHL.
Yeah, he's... Where I really like him is on the forecheck. Like he's got a gnat like, you know, G-N-A-T, a gnat like type of, aura to him, where he's just always there, really smart positionally, really aggressive, and is so far catching guys off guard. But I think we are seeing that, you know, skill wise, he's a middle six guy. He's not somebody like people are already like, you know, thinking that he's going to supplant Rossi or something or Arizona. Right.
He's a middle six center that I think has some upside, but he wasn't he scored well in the KHL as an underage guy, but if you even look at his numbers, wasn't like he was a point of game guy and scored 11 goals that season. I think he looks to me like he's going to be a good NHL player and a guy that, you know, he was a second round pick.
Yeah.
This isn't like he was a top five overall pick or a Kaprizov that would have been if people thought he was going to come over right away, but a good NHL player looks like, and his speed is evident.
Yeah.
Which is something that I know that Billy Guerin made a point to point that out, that during that draft, Judd Brackett had come to him and said, this is the fastest guy in the draft. Mm-hmm. So I like him.
What are they going to do with Johansson and Gaudreau? I mean, this is a full year of, like, it is painful watching them some nights. I mean, Gaudreau is, like, neutered.
He's like, playing with zero confidence right now.
It's not even that, though. Like, does he ever get angry on the ice, get gritty, get anything? Like, it's just... If you're not bringing skill, you got to do something else. And JoJo is he's a line killer, man.
Although I think he's going to end up being about the same thing he always is. I mean, he's 35 to 45 points. He's going to end up somewhere in that neighborhood. He's almost 30, I think, this year, if I remember the numbers right. But he might be a hair off that. That's what he is. He's not a top line guy. He might be what you'd call a middle six guy, maybe a bottom half of the second line, top half of the third line guy.
How different he looks from last year with Boldy.
At the end of last season, he looked terrific.
Because he fooled me.
Yeah, and if he's a guy who's on your third line that when somebody gets banged up, he jumps up on the top six for a while, you're probably fine. I think the price they've got him for next year is fine. $2 million for a guy who's going to score 35 points.
Actually, he'll get 60 next year because it's a contract year. So
that's true. Next year could be a big year for him. But
that's
truth
the thing.
Is,
it's like people are like, you got to buy him out. You got to trade him. Like, no, I'd keep him for next year because he'll finally have some motivation behind him.
Yeah, but when you look at like his career, even in his best seasons with the Caps, he was like a mid-40s point guy. He was never a 60-point guy. But most years when he was healthy, he wasn't a 25-point guy either. You could count on him for 35 to 45. He'd have that stretch where for 6, 8, 10 games. I remember watching a lot of those Caps games, and when Kuznetsov or Backstrom was out of the lineup, he'd be the guy that would jump in one of those spots on those power plays, and he was good. But he was never there consistently. He was just always there for a couple weeks here and there. And for the price that he's locked in for next year, if he's on your third line, you're fine. If you're counting on him to be an every night top six guy, he's probably not that.
So I was just down at the GM's meetings down in South Florida. It was funny. It's like there was lots of news, but then when you look at it, like there really was no news. You know, like 3-3, they didn't change anything. They decided that, they're perfectly fine with guys going back to their own zone 50 times in overtime. Didn't extend 3-on-3. They came up with some new rules, like effective immediately. It's not a new rule. It's just, they're going to start applying a rule in the rule book. They're going to start penalizing players that pull the Kirill Kaprizov. There was one game in St. Louis the other day where somebody extended their shift, overextended their shift, and Kaprizov had to be sitting on the boards for 40 seconds. That stuff now will get a warning first and then a penalty for your team. And so they're going to start doing that. There's going to be a recommendation to increase the types of things that you can have coaches challenges for. This one I totally agree with, pucks over the glass. The other is friendly fire. What's really interesting about those, it can only be that you challenge if it's a penalty called. So you better be 100% right, because if you're wrong, it's going to be a 5-on-3 because you get the penalty, and then you get the penalty for being wrong on the same power play, on the same penalty kill. So it could be a 5-on-3. Face-off warnings were a big deal down there.
Face-off warnings don't do much for me.
I didn't know that, and this made no sense to me. So if you ice the puck, that the defensive player that doesn't get to change, if he jumps, he is a violation, he gets a warning, and then is kicked out, where the offensive player just gets kicked out.
Right. Yeah. The offensive player, it's the same rules as forever.
Right.
But the defensive guy always gets that one warning, right. And that's when you'll see the referee point up at the ceiling with the one. That doesn't matter much to me. If you are deliberately not touching the puck with a delayed penalty coming up, now you get the, or played with a high stick, that they get to move it up one zone. That doesn't do anything for me. The rules I really wanted to see them discuss, and the two challenges you mentioned, I like the fact that they can't challenge to create a penalty call, because I'd hate to see it. If they deem that it was deflected, right or wrong, they deem that it was deflected. When you look at the numbers of how many the officials have really missed with the puck going out of play, it's like 4, I think, this year,
crazy.
6 all of last year on 125 penalties.
Yeah.
I mean, who cares? That's close enough.
Yeah.
And
although one of them, they showed, so they pulled the media in for like a 30-minute like tutorial. It's unbelievable the number of wild clips that were shown that were wrong. All right. One was missed, Spurgeon in Colorado, had to be last year. Put a puck into the stands that definitely deflected. But the one that was hilarious to me was the Johansson. Remember that game?
Yeah.
And Dean went crazy. JoJo went crazy. The league is the one that actually put out the email that said that it was overturned because he was offside and it wasn't possession and control. And then, boom, they admitted, we screwed up.
I remember Dean after the game saying, the guy carried the puck from our own zone into their zone.
Yeah.
When did he lose possession? And remember, their argument was that the puck wasn't touching his stick as he entered the zone. Yeah. It was.
I was talking to a GM about this. Actually, a couple of us went for drinks with this GM, and I brought that clip up, and he goes, my only problem with that one that I agree with the league original call was that the defender made a play on Johansson, which caused it. And that is the difference. Like, a lot of times the possession and control is just a guy coming into the zone and precedes the puck, but he had control. This one, what this GM was saying was that the defender stepped into Johansson, which caused him to lose.
Do you remember the play a couple of years ago where Mikko made a great play by lifting his stick off the puck, skated out of the zone, and then back in?
Yep.
And that would fly in the face of this ruling, because he technically never lost possession of the puck, but because he lifted his stick up so he wasn't touching the puck, he got himself back onside. So that's the one on the other side of the argument.
Next GM's meetings, I might have opened up a can of worms that's going to cause a major rule change, okay? So I went up to Coley Campbell, and I brought this up. Remember, I brought this up to John Hines, and I mentioned it on last week's podcast. So I went up to Coley Campbell, who's basically the one that makes a lot of these decisions that bring rule change potentials to the GMs. And I said, hey, let me ask you a question. So John Hines was telling the players, because they didn't know the players didn't know that if you lose a point on a 3-on-3 when you pull the goalie, that if you get scored on, that you're going to lose the point. So he told them, if you lose the puck, make sure you go pressure the puck carrier, because Fleury can't come back on the fly. And I said to him, I'm like, what would stop any team from sending 10 guys on the ice, putting Fleury back on the ice, you know, essentially taking an intentional penalty, and then you're at least saying, all right, yeah, I got to kill a 4-on-3, but at least I know I get my point back if you lose the puck. And he started thinking about it. And by the way, here's what's really interesting.
I think it's a penalty shot.
No, it's not.
If a player comes over the boards intentionally, like if there's not even a guy going off on it, like if it's a clear breakaway for the other team and a guy jumps on the ice, I thought that was a penalty shot.
I'm just saying if you lose the puck and they're trying to figure out a way to get that empty net goal, if you just suddenly all of a sudden send four guys on the ice and you got too many men. And so basically what I'm saying is that they're going to try to even think about this. Like, because you know what's really interesting? So I asked people from the league. Nobody even understands when this rule was put in. Nobody remembers even why they had they added the point. Like, I think it's common sense for us to know why they added the you lose a point thing, but nobody can remember who brought it up.
I remember the very first year when they put the 3-on-3 overtime in, that on the conference call that we had, they immediately explained it. Like, so it was just,
they had this rule when it was 4-on-4.
Right.
This,
that's what I mean. So the overtimes, they had the explanation for it, I just remember them explaining it that way from the beginning. Yeah. So I know it's been that way since the start.
Yeah. It's been that way since 99, 2000, but nobody can remember who suggested losing a point if you pull the goalie and scored on and why. And so anyway, I guess what I'm saying is that we could see another rule change because it is a loophole. I mean, you're right. If a guy is about to shoot into the empty net, you could award the goal. Okay.
Right. But I think let's just say the normal flow of the game. Mm-hmm. I think if a guy's on a breakaway and you have a guy jump off the bench, I think it's a penalty shot.
It's a penalty shot, but what would it be if there's no goalie in net?
Would it be an awarded goal?
Right,
probably.
But technically, that's not in the rule book, I guess, is what I'm saying. So, you know, it's just something that I brought up to Coley that I might have opened up a little bit of a can of worms. Here's something. So I had dinner with Elliot Friedman and Lou Nanny the other night. Lou Lands, guy's 82 years old, okay? If I wake up in the morning and fly anywhere, I'm, like, exhausted the rest of the day. This guy wakes up in the Turks, lands in Miami Airport, takes a car up with his son and his wife Francine, and has the driver drop him off at the restaurant to meet Elliot and I for dinner, I would have 100% canceled on me. Like, if that was me, I would have been like, Anthony, I am off tired. Sorry. Oh, here. All right. I got a text, Brandon. 35 minutes, I cursed.
Oh, boy.
35 minutes, I dropped an F-bomb. There. It's in there. But don't you, like, I
yeah,
would...
I wouldn't even invite you to dinner, because I would know in advance you'd bail.
Exactly. And Louis,
I would tell Margo. She'd say, where are you going to dinner? I'd say, well, I'm going by myself. Well, where's Russo? And I said, I wouldn't be able to count on him showing up, so I didn't even invite him.
I valet the car, and we walk in, and there's just Louis at the bar, just hanging out.
And I'll guarantee you that I don't even know where you ate or what he had.
It was probably one of the greatest meals
he ever had in his life.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, I haven't talked to Louis in... Let's say 15 years without the last meal that he had being the greatest meal he's ever had in his life.
Every time I talk to Louis, I walk away and I'm just like, what a way to live a life. Like, he just enjoys life, you know, like, just came back from the Turks after being, you know, couldn't walk around town here for 2 weeks without being stopped and congratulated. And you're the best, Louis. I asked Louis how hard it was to be in this restaurant and not get a standing ovation. You know what I always find fascinating about Lou too, is that let's be honest, we have a lot of stories, but we're broken records. If you and I are at dinner with somebody that's never eaten with us, we're telling everybody every story that we've ever... Like, when you're with Louis, every story he ever tells, I've never heard before. And he remembers it like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
He doesn't there's no repeats.
Well, some of them, I ask him to repeat them because I want to hear them again. But
see if he tells it the same way.
Well, just because they're so good.
Yeah.
But he's got a few more years on us. Maybe in 30 years, we'll have 30 years worth of more stories.
30 years, I won't remember anything. I mean, that's just, I can't remember anything now. So.
Yeah, he's got more stories than most. I've never met a guy that is more well-respected, is more well-connected in whatever his line of work is. And for him, it's obviously hockey, and not just pro hockey, college hockey, Olympic hockey, national team hockey, all that. Everybody who he's ever crossed paths with, everybody's ever played with, everybody's ever coached with, they all love him. And he's got great stories about all of them.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And remember, think about the era where he was in the NHL.
That's why I love the stories.
If we think now the league is making things up as they go, back in those days, they absolutely were making up the rules as they were. The deals that he talks about having been made over a couple of scotches at some restaurant.
He was telling some arbitration stories that were hilarious. He was telling how he used to manipulate the schedule.
Schedules, TV timeouts within games that, hey, we need a whistle. And he'd walk down the hall and get on the horn to the producer in the truck and say, next whistle, go to break. I mean, the kind of stuff that used to be allowed to go on. And then it was at a larger scale. It was expansion teams and teams moving and arena negotiations. I mean, this guy had his fingers in all of it and is aware of all of it. The stories are fascinating to me.
We didn't mention LTIR, by the way. No changes right now. GMs don't seem to have a problem with any of this.
Yeah, it's still, I can't figure out why they don't, but they don't. So it's their deal.
I think they don't because they hope to use it one day.
Right. I think that's exactly right. It's the same reason why the overtime point system will never change. I was talking with a couple of people today, in fact, and they were asking me about some of those rules. And I said, look, no GM will ever approve a change that takes that point away because it makes it look like everybody's got a winning record. Teams that are 25, 20, and 5 say they're over 500. If they're 25, 25, and 10, they call themselves 500. They've lost 35 games and won 25, but yet they say they're 500. And I think the LTIR thing is similar. They all think about, well, I don't ever want to be the guy that's in that spot where I'm desperate for a player, and therefore I can't do it. So
remember, one reason why 22 teams or whatever the number is have gone into LTI this year, and obviously a couple teams based on timing were able to take advantage of it, like Vegas, who essentially has $115 million payroll, is because the cap has been flat. The hope is that this will be less and less and less as the cap goes up the next couple of years. Here's a word from some of our sponsors. Hey, it's Russo for Livia Weight Control Centers. The weather has been spring-like virtually all winter long, but it's about to get even better. So get spring ready the Livia way and lose up to 10 pounds in your first 2 weeks. I joined Livia back in December. I've crossed the 25-pound mark because of the personalized and doctor-recommended program tailored to my unique needs, goals, and lifestyle. I was there Monday. I told them about heading down to the GM's meetings in South Florida this Sunday. And these trips are hard work, but there's a social nature to it as well. Between meeting up with people in the game for drinks and having dinner at night with the Pierre LeBruns and the Elliot Friedmans and the Jeff Merricks of the world, they gave me all sorts of tools and tips so I can continue on my weight loss journey and not stray off path. And if you join Livia today, you'll get your first 3 months free. Plus, Livia is now offering breakthrough weight loss medications at their center locations. The medical weight loss program has been the perfect thing to complement the work that I've done on the nutrition side of the journey. It's amazing how it decreases my appetite during my sometimes 20-hour days of late nights and early flights. So join Livia today and get your first 3 months free. Visit Livia.com, that's Livia.com, or call 855-GO-LIVIA. Plus, make sure to tell them Russo sent you and they'll get you all set up. And don't forget to ask about those breakthrough weight loss medication options. Visit Livia.com or call 855-GO-LIVIA. Start your weight loss journey now and get spring ready the Livia way. There are a lot of options to buy glasses out there. If you've been disappointed by high prices or poor online quality, check out our friends at Huxley Optical. I like Huxley for two reasons. First is the price. Simply put, I don't want to spend $800 on glasses. At Huxley, I know I'll get the same quality for half the price. They're a small, independent business that is here to help you find glasses you love and save you money. Second is the service. They have options catered to what I need, and I know someone will be happy to help me find glasses. Whether it's a lens replacement, office glasses, or a brand new pair, they're always ready to help. Check out HuxleyEyewear.com. Again, that's HuxleyEyewear.com today. Or go to their locations in Wayzata or Roseville. Tell them Russo sent you for 10% off your prescription purchase. Back here, final segment of Worst Seats in the House. Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta. March 27th is our next live show at Elsie's. Hope to see you there.
So we're talking about some of the changes that were discussed for the general managers. And I'd be curious that some of them we like, some of them mean nothing. If you had the ability to just make one change right now in the league, what would it be?
Oh my God. put me on the spot. One change, and you go first, and then I'll maybe it'll give me some time to think.
Well, there are a lot of little things. I mean, I'm opposed to the LTIR system and all that. I'd like to just see a playoff salary cap that's the same as the season. But for me, I would love to see that overtime point go away and just say, you know what, you either win or you lose. If you want to play overtime, play it for 5 minutes or 7 minutes or whatever. End most of the games there. And if it ends at that point, it's a tie.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't, you've either won or you lost. There's no other sport that gives you a bonus for pushing the game into overtime. If you lose an overtime in football,
I agree with you.
You lose an overtime in basketball, you lose. You lose an extra innings in baseball, you lose. It's that simple. There is no benefit to just saying, hey, we almost won.
Well, we know what the benefit is. The benefit is pretending like the Minnesota Wild are in the playoff hunt and the New York Islanders and the Washington Capitals.
I don't know that it would change it that much, except it would eliminate this facade that you're 500. If you're 30-30-10, you're not 500.
Yeah.
And because I saw a thing the other day.
We're calling you Patrick Royce.
No, I saw a thing the other day that said that had it if you went to the three-point system, which we had talked about before.
Which is basically the same.
And
right?
it didn't change the playoff picture much by saying you got 3 points for winning in regulation. They were like, maybe the 8 team became the 9 team. It didn't really change it much. I don't know how much it would change on a given season, but I know there have been some seasons where it would make a major change. Dallas last year was a perfect example. They had like 16 or 18 overtime losses. Well, those are still losses.
Yeah.
They don't, if you're going to demand a point for coming close and losing, then you can't take 2 points for winning in those same spots.
I don't disagree with you. I've been harping on the fact. I mean, I'm more on my stance on this is a little different. I think it's absurd that this is a league where every game is not worth equal.
Right.
Every single night. And that's what some games are worth three, some games are worth two. It's we're saying the same thing, but my thing is more.
You'd go the other way and go the 3 point
like,
games.
Everything? I just think it's got to, then either every game's got to be three or every game's got to be two. But I agree with you. It screws up the math. It makes it impossible for teams to. I was talking to that same GM the other day, and he told me when we were at this place, Benny's on the beach, which by the way, you got to check out next time we're down there. He told me that his team, I don't want to say the record because I wanted to give it out, but they've been absolutely on fire, and they've gained 1 point on this team in the Eastern Conference, 1 point in the stretch where they are essentially like, let's just make it up 14-4. And they've gained 1 point. And obviously the Rangers are on fire too, but it is just so hard to, you know, gain ground on in this league.
It is because of what we're talking about. You lose a game in overtime, you still get a point. And I make the overtimes 8 minutes long, where I know that I love the fact that they study it every year, the 3-on-3, to look at how many games end before you get to a shootout, because I'd love to see the shootout go away.
I hate the shootout.
I just don't understand. I know why it came into play. Fans didn't want to go and watch a tie game, but you don't go to a baseball game, and if it's tied after the 11th, you settle it by a home run derby. You don't go to a basketball game, and if it's tied after a 5 minute overtime, you settle it on a dunk contest or a 3 point shootout. There is no other game where it's settled on a skills competition. It's you win, you lose, or you tie, and that's it. And football is the only one that even allows a tie. So the other sports, you play till somebody wins, and then you win or you lose.
Imagine winning a gold medal in the Olympics on a freaking shootout.
So play for 8 minutes, play 3-on-3. Most of the games are going to end there anyway with a winner or a loser. And if they don't, what's the worst thing about having a tie after you've watched 8 minutes of 3-on-3 overtime? The fans certainly aren't going to leave disappointed. This year, I think they said 70% of the games had been decided in overtime.
69.6.
So if you go another 3 minutes, that number's got to go up to 80 in theory. So if 20% of your games end in a tie and 80% get settled, so be it. Now you go to that overtime. Think of the Wild's overtime against Nashville. Think of how big that 2 points would have been if Nashville was going to get zero instead of one.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just one example. Same with Colorado beating the Wild, I guess, in overtime out in Denver. If Minnesota, no matter how well they played, didn't get a point just for getting to overtime.
Mm-hmm.
They lost.
Yeah.
So it's a loss.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree. So I stayed down in South Florida. Do you ever get this? Like, you're from Duluth originally, right? Like, I don't know.
My family's from Duluth. I've never lived there.
But. Oh, okay. All right. But obviously just around here. So it's the first time I went down to Boca, and I got there Sunday, rented a car just for the jams meetings, and I just went down to Boca just to drive around because I had time, and went to my old high school, saw my old newspaper, like, offices, saw my old condo, drove by my parents' old house, grandparents' old house, drove around Meisner Park. Like, it was honestly one of the, like, even I ran into Gary Bettman, who lives in Boca, and Gary's like, you ever get misty-eyed when you come down here? And I'm like, actually, you're not even going to freaking believe this, but I just drove around Boca, and I'm actually feeling that right this moment. It was one of those things where you start thinking about your old days and how old you are. But two, you start, like, I'm thinking about old stories about excited about, like, driving to this place to buy a beeper once. Or I remember those old ESPN beepers? Do you remember this? I got one of those, and I remember thinking of how cool I was that I'd be, like, on the sideline of a football field knowing what the Cincinnati Reds score was. You know, like, that was such a long time ago where you didn't – where, like, if you thought of something and didn't know the answer, you couldn't just Google it. You actually had to not know for a couple hours, you know?
I miss those days, number one, because I miss the discussions that took place arguing about them and trying to figure it out. So I – well, it's a little different for me. I do have those moments every once in a while when I do drive to Duluth because of some of the family memories I have with both my parents from there, and my grandfather owned a grocery store there. So I do like driving around there, but I live in my hometown now. So I live less than 10 minutes from where I grew up. I'm driving the same streets, going to the same places that I've been my whole life anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I coach football at the school I went to high school. So I'm in the building all the time. So I experience that kind of stuff a lot on a daily basis. So it's not, I don't think it probably stands out quite as much as it did for you on a trip like this, just because it's such a regular occurrence for me.
Yeah, that's a good point. It was really neat. Like, just seeing, thinking about old newspaper stories and things like that. So it was a really fun trip to go down there. I love those GMs meetings too, because it's a chance to really catch up with all the GMs, see people that you haven't seen in a while, work on features. I've got three or four things now in the pipeline. We have so many good story ideas coming up too. By the way, next week at the Athletic, it's going to be Brock Faber week. Just because we have three or four off days essentially before Thursday's game. So Monday, Joe Smith's been working on this story for a while, where he's talked to tons of people about just how good Faber is to make the case for the Calder. Tuesday, Mark Lazarus and I are going to be going back and forth in the Athletic, basically making the case for him for Bedard, me for Faber. And then Wednesday or Thursday, Shayna Goldman and I are going to be writing a feature on what Brock Faber's next contract could look like. So Brock Faber is going to be very exposed next week. So hopefully against the Blues, he's not -3 again. We need him to be +3 to get that thing.
Well, here, I'll give you one thing you can use in your favor, that Connor Bedard right now, as we do this show, they're playing against the Ducks right now. So who knows what it'll end up by the end of the night. But he's a -38 at this point in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a -38 without really playing like a meaningful shift since October.
Yeah.
The Blackhawks have been out of it. There's only two players in the league that have a worse plus minus than him. And one of them is his teammate, Kurashev. And it isn't like everybody on his team is a -38. There are guys that are in the minus mid-teens. And so it isn't like sometimes when you look and you say, well, yeah, he was a -30, but everybody on the Sharks were a -30 that year. So, you know, that you can use that as one argument. But then the other one was that I looked to see, like, when was the last time a guy won a Calder that had that number? The last Calder Trophy winner that had a plus minus as bad as Connor Bedard right now was Gilbert Perreault in 1972, was a -38. So no Calder winner has been this. And think about it.
Yeah.
A lot of those rookies had to be on one of the worst teams in the league.
Yeah. Yep.
Because by definition, that's how they landed there. The only guy that's been anywhere close was Mario Lemieux. I forget what his rookie year was, 85 or 86.
Yeah.
One of those two.
They tanked in 84, right?
So 85 then.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was minus 33, but he had 100 points. So you could probably take the minus 33 from a guy that scored 100.
Yeah, yeah.
But the only guy that's at Bedard's number ever to win the rookie of the year was Gilbert
Perreault. Did he win rookie of the year? I can't remember.
No, I thought Crosby won it that year, didn't he?
No, because Ovi would have started the year before, right?
He did win, actually. He had 100 points.
What was his plus-minus? Because he was awful at the beginning of his career.
I think he was plus when he was a rookie.
Okay.
But he did have the year. He was the first guy, or he had the worst plus-minus ever for a guy that led the league in goals.
Okay.
That was like maybe 6 or 8 years ago. And...
Jeez, man. Ovi's rookie year, 05-06, had 52 goals and 106 points.
106. And wasn't he over plus? He was a positive plus guy, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was crazy.
But there was a year recently, like, look at his career, because I think it was maybe, I want to say eight years ago.
Yeah, it was under Boudreau, right?
Might have been. And it was about 8 years ago. I forget exactly we had looked it up, but it was either the most goals ever for a guy at that minus or the worst plus minus for a guy that led the league in goals or something like that at whatever point in his career.
Yeah. Where is plus minuses on this stupid thing? There we go. All right. So 05-06, he actually was minus 19. He was plus 2 that year.
When he was a rookie.
Yeah.
Yeah,
minus 35 is the one you're talking about. In 2014, he was a minus 35 and he had 51 goals.
Okay.
But I don't think he led the league in goals that year.
It was probably the lowest plus minus for a guy with 50 goals, I bet, was what
it was. But that was, because Boudreau was there then. And then
he might have led the league in goals that year with 51. Would have been close.
He might have, yeah. I think on Elite Prospects,
he scored 51 goals and was a minus 35. But I'm just, if you're going to make your argument about the rookies of the year, you can use the worst ever since Gilbert Perreault if you want to support your argument that Bedard isn't a no-brainer.
Okay.
And Bedard's going to win. He's going to win. But I don't know that he necessarily should win. And what's interesting about it is what people lose sight of is you're not talking about who's going to have the better career. Bedard's going to be a great player. He's going to be a better player than Brock Faber ever will. He's going to be a more impactful player. He has a chance to be a generational player. But that isn't what the Rookie of the Year award is for. That's for who had a better year this year. And I think you could make a legitimate case that Brock Faber has been a better player this year, especially when you consider what role he's filled on his team, how he's had to pick up the slack when other defensemen have gone down, the role he's filled, the first power play, the first penalty kill, the most minutes in the league, trying almost single-handedly to keep a defensive core together for a team in the playoff race, as opposed to a guy who's scoring in at a near minus 40 clip.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And in 13-14, he did lead the league in goals and was minus 35. So you were right on the minus 35 and led the league. See, again, if back in the day, I would not have been able to look this up so quickly.
That's right. We would have just had a debate at dinner
and
say, I think there was a year where this guy had like 50 goals and was a minor. And
how do we do everything? Like I was telling you, I drove Elliot Freeman. You're going to love this. Well, I know you love this because you tweeted about it. Elliot Freeman and I drove down to the Florida Panthers ribbon cutting for their practice facility yesterday. And we were talking and I was doing the whole nostalgia thing with him. I was showing him everything. We drove down the A1A. It's a leisurely trip down to Fort Lauderdale. But I showed him this place where I used to work at the Deerfield Beach office. And like I was telling you, like, what did we ever do without the MapQuest? Because the Waze app was getting us around a lot of traffic. And I'm like, I remember when I was a young sports writer, if we were going on the road somewhere, and say we were going to Phoenix, Denver, LA, Anaheim, I would have to sit there before the trip and go up to MapQuest.com, be by a printer, and do, all right, Phoenix Airport, rental car place, because there was no Uber or whatever, you know, to the Airport Marriott, to the, you know, America West Arena, to the restaurant that I know I'm going to want to go back to the Marriott. I'd have to print this all out. And then same thing for Denver, you know, airport to the Pepsi Center to whatever.
Yeah, well,
and
I'll go you one generation and back
the,
from
just
that.
Real quick, the other thing is there was no, like, Google or anything. So, like, if they were going on a five-game trip, I'd have to pack an extra duffel bag with all the media guides so I know what heights and weights and all that stuff were. The guide and record book, that big fat book that was, you know, like all
so,
that.
So I'll go you one generation back. Because we didn't have MapQuest, we had maps. So you had the folded maps in your glove compartment, and when you drove into Iowa, you had to stop and get an Iowa map, and that's how you figured out where the hell you were going. It wasn't so. And the people that were a little bit more like the fancier people that had AAA would call AAA in advance of their trip, and they would put together exactly what you're saying for them and mail it to them. Mm-hmm. So I remember. I went out to Colorado with my uncles to go on a ski trip when I was in like junior high. They'd call AAA in advance, like they'd have to do it a month before the trip. And AAA would send them, here's the printout of everything where you are going. And, but for me, it was always just the folded up maps. And then I absolutely remember the media guides. When I was doing Twins radio, that's exactly how you would take every trip, is you'd throw the media guides of each team that you were going to see on that trip into your bag. And you'd also have the player register. You'd have the league guide. Back then it was the National League.
I love those player registers. Right.
And
those
baseball
cool.
was the National League Green Book and the American League Red Book.
Yeah.
And
it I had all those of books. Those.
So you'd bring all that stuff with you because there was no way to look it up once you got there.
Yeah.
You mentioned the ESPN pager. What I'll never forget is, I was doing radio for the Twins, and I remember at that time it was Sports Ticker would have they'd have a computer in each booth that had Sports Ticker on it. But I remember listening to old radio broadcasts, and Jack Buck used to say it every night in the last segment of the postgame, I'll check the ticker and be back after this. You'd come back after the break, you'd have the latest updates from the out of town scoreboard on the Sports Ticker. Well, when I was doing those games, I was so fascinated by this Sports Ticker that all of a sudden it was, I can see real time on this, you know, an MS-DOS screen that would, you know, RBI double by whoever that puts by Cooper puts the Brewers ahead 6-5. And so I would be keeping a running tally on my sheet so I'd be ready for the out-of-town scoreboard and the postgame show. Because it wasn't like you could go back and you had to have a running.
And like, your out-of-town scoreboard was done like 20, you know,
exactly.
Was way behind. Let's answer a couple Twitter questions, then we'll wrap up the show. Burb Leahy goes, I love this question. If Marcus Johansson played for Torts, how many games could he go recording 1 or 0 shots and 17 minutes of time on ice before getting healthy scratched? He would be 100% scratched by now.
He would accept that. What I think people continue to lose sight of with this Wild team
is a difference.
Who's going to take their place?
I totally agree with you.
There is nobody ready. Right now, we've got a fourth line that for most organizations would be playing in Iowa.
Yes.
And because of the fact that you just don't have the money.
I totally agree with you.
So if you had veteran guys here, absolutely. And
but it is funny because Torts would.
Yeah, he'd be at his wit's end without a doubt. But he'd be looking down the saying, well, who am I going to put in?
Bush asks, what do you think Adam Beckman's ceiling is?
I think we might have seen it. I mean, I think he's a decent player, but he's going to be a fourth line, maybe a third line player at
tweener though.
Yeah, somewhere in that neighborhood. To me, he
like
looks,
a gaunt tweener man going up and down.
Right, he looks more like the, you know, those guys are valuable. I mean, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago after Duhaime and Duer were traded. It probably reached their ceiling. They're likely going to be fourth line players and penalty kill players throughout their career. Those guys are valuable, but they're not irreplaceable. And that's kind of what I see Beckman as.
And,
he's probably a similar type of guy.
A lot of people down in South Florida, Duer has not played well in Toronto so far. Duhaime, I think, is doing his job, but, you know, so far, obviously not scoring. Random Nick says, is Hines the right coach for this team? I think you and I have talked about it, and they were 11-3 under his first 14. Then they went into that awful stretch where he had everybody out of the lineup for the most part since that 1-7-1 stretch. I mean, they are 100% a playoff team. So if you take out the 19 games under Dean and that 1-7-1 stretch, if you have just John Hines as the coach,
they're second best team in the league. Second best team in the league, which, and I think the 1-7-1 stretch, I think it's fair to eliminate that because, as we talked about a couple shows ago, and we showed it on one of our broadcasts, that 9-game stretch, the players they were missing for those 9 games, I mean, it was Brodin for 9, Kaprizov for 6, Zuccarello for 6. We're not talking Spurgeon for 7, I think. We're not talking about that they were missing 7 players simultaneously. Their best 2 scorers, their best 2 defensemen, and their best goalie at the time were among them. If you take that 1-7-1 stretch away, since the coaching change, the Oilers are the only team that have a better points percentage. And I think that's indicative of what this club is.
Yeah. Somebody asked if we're going to be around for the NCAA Frozen Four. We're both on the road for that. Joe's actually coming. He's going to be covering that for us. Let me just see if there's any other questions. Somebody asked if Firstov had to get a updated work visa. From my understanding, he did not because he had a contract with a work visa with the Wild. I don't know. You think that's it, Anthony? You have any final thoughts?
I have no final thoughts other than let's enjoy the 6-game homestand and see where the Wild sit at the end of it.
All right, cool. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. As always, our next live show is at March 27 at Elsie's. Definitely come on down there at 7 p.m., but come early because Grain Belt has a cheeseburger, fries, and Grain Belt beer special in a Worst Seats in the House glass for $12.99. So definitely come on down early. Again, March 27, 7 p.m. at Elsie's. Thanks for joining us from our Aquarius Home Services studio on location. Thanks to our sponsors, Aquarius Home Services, your local authorized dealer for Connecticut water treatments, Bosch Law Firm, Livia Weight Control Centers, Royal Credit Union, and Huxley Eyewear. Talk to you next week, everybody.
So much coming out, there's nothing going in. I know that you feel like you're never gonna win. Oh, but the world won't forgive a winner.
I'm disgruntled, so I'm just gonna tell you right now that I'm gonna flip a lid if you try to justify last night's loss by any stretch of the imagination other than they freaking sucked.